Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
Dumpty Dum, a podcast about the archers and the goings-on of Ambridge. It's P&Q here, Philippa Hall with my flappy paddle gearbox.
And Quentin Rayner. And Philippa, have I told you how hot you look in wellies?
That's not what's in my script.
I just changed it.
Thanks. I'm scratting around with your silly little woolen hats. There's you lot, our lovely Dumpty Dummers. This week's Midsummer Murders Dumpty Dum tune is from our Stephen. And on this episode, we're lucky enough to hear contributions from Erica, our Rob, Tracy in California, Catherine in Canterbury, cycling again, Christine, Witherspoon, Emily from Canada, Chris in York, and Anon of Ambridge, plus Tweet of the Week, Facebook Roundup, and welcoming new members of our Facebook group. Predictions for next week and the Dumpty Book Dum item, this time with Stuart Lawrence. Marvellous. So let's look back on the Ambridge week, and what have you sniffed out for us this time, Q?
This week started with the startling revelation that Ruth has a terrible medical condition known as poo on the brain, as she explained the complexities of storing slurry to Beth.
I don't go on about slurry, do I?
Ruth whimpered to Josh.
But he just wanted to talk about his bright idea for solar panels at Brookfield. They'd pay for themselves in just 8 years. So obviously Ruth gave him a definite no and got her head buried in dairy herd listings again, aka where the sun don't shine.
But at least she hasn't got shit for brains, unlike Freddy. If you thought he might struggle at crypto, a cryptic clue blew his mind.
Look for me where the band can't sit down.
Had him hopping mad in his pursuit of the Easter Bunny for Lower Loxley's event.
After he'd worked out it was...
bandstand.
He hurtled off to the Memorial Gardens to secure his...
marketing coup.
Like an excitable kid who's had too many sweets. Two secret parties were being planned.
A book token
was the only thing David could suggest Vince might buy for his sister's birthday, while Rory revealed the only reason he's packing Brian and Jenny off to Bath was to throw a party at home. But none of the guests are his uni friends.
And he wasn't saved by the bell either after his phone went off, revealing a call from a Julianne. Tetchily, he told Ben and Beth to drop it as he visibly blushed.
Ardil continued to stick his nose in all over Grey Gables.
Ian was fed up with him hanging around his kitchen.
And Cathy was annoyed his electric car was blocking her parking space. But of course, we never heard from the hot cross Hun.
Topical gag there, folks. However, Tracy's head was turned after the smoothie in the suit bet Oliver wished he had a few more Tracy's around.
He's very charming.
The receptionist swooned.
He thinks I have a lot of potential and could do well elsewhere.
The suspicious Jazza wasn't having any of it. Stay put, Hen, he told her, and he'd find another job to supplement his reduced barrow hours.
Hearts were fluttering as Ben and Beth finally cashed in their supercar day. Ben got in a flap about his paddles and bailed early, giving up his seat to Leonard, who turned out to be a natural.
As B&B had a heart-to-heart and declared they were in love, Jill was being given the ride of her life by the instructor Carl at 120 miles an hour.
My legs are still wobbling, the adrenaline junkie confessed after Leonard offered to take her up the Hassett Hills afterwards.
Is Vince a pussycat, fox or loan shark? The self-confessed chancer had 40 grand burning in his back pocket and was desperate to lend it to David and Ruth to install the solar panels.
The Brookfield Luddites resisted,
but were swept away by West Midlands charm.
You can take the boy out of Brub, but you can't take the Brubby out of the boy.
He whimsically opened with,
I like you, that's why I offered you the loan, and I respect you too much to try and pull a fast one.
A final flourish.
The deal was sealed with a hug and a kiss and a compliment about Brookfield's cow-shaped bog brush.
Rory loved it that B&B were all lerved up, and his bestie hoped Julianne was the girl for him.
Turned out she was a sugar mummy twice his age. He'd met online at a site called Sugar Baby, where rich people pay to hook up with someone younger for companionship.
Oh yeah, right. Pass the £80 bottle of wine over here, would you?
Oh, so Q, how's your week been?
I just want to say I was in the presence of royalty earlier on because you came on. Once again, folks, we can see each other again, having got over the shock last week. So we hope to give you a bit more zip this time because we could have driven a bus through some of the gaps, couldn't you? We just looked at each other. Oh, that's Philip. You came on this morning wearing a tiara, which was interesting.
I did. Particularly compared to yesterday when we had to do some checks online and I wasn't quite at my best.
No, you will see, and you'll see what we mean when I'll post something on our Facebook group later on.
Yes.
You ask how my week has been. My wife and I have been in self-imposed isolation because we are going away and we have to get a negative COVID test before we can fly. So we've been sort of stuck together for 10 days, which has been delightful. a measure of how dull the week has been was that I can honestly say the highlight of my week was the arrival of a bumper pack of pants for me. But I was very pleased with this, that I chose correctly, with my preferred A-front, which I presume you know what an A-front is.
I've no idea, and I don't think I want to know.
No, it's that all-important side slit. Anyway, I was very happy that I'd chosen the right ones. I told you, that's the level of...
It's awful.
...of my excitement this week. A few walks and a bike ride as well. Top that if you can. A-front, go.
I don't even want to try. I've had my first hot cross bun ever. Which was very nice.
Ever?
Yes. It had apple in it and it was lovely.
Sorry. You've never had a hot cross bun before?
Well, why would I? There's no chocolate. It just seems, you know, once more another waste of calories.
How can you have lived half a century, sorry to give your age away, and never had a hot cross bun?
Well, I seem to have spent most of my week talking to you, Quentin, to be honest. You accompanied me on a dog walk. You accompanied me on a run.
I did.
And I had to keep stopping because I couldn't talk.
Sounds like I'm stalking you. These are all legit conversations, folks, honest. I completely stumped you there saying you looked hot in wellies, didn't I? You weren't ready for that one.
But it wasn't in the script. Yeah, I wasn't expecting you to say that. You were going to be saying about put the peeler down.
Put the peeler down, but that was a decoy because, and I was thinking it'd be all sort of cooey and gushing. Ooh, thank you, just nothing. Like bloody tumbleweed, wasn't it? Nothing.
Well, when you post the photo,
try and pay a compliment, folks.
No, when you post the photo that you took yesterday, I think everyone will understand.
The wellies are just the best bit.
It's all good fun. But yeah, happy Easter anyway.
Oh, happy Easter, of course. We're doing this Easter Sunday, so happy Easter, everybody.
Yes, I've been eyeing up my Easter egg, but I've been very good and not succumbed yet.
Yeah, I've resisted mine.
So just so everyone knows, so you've...
Can I just... I'm just going to see a couple of things on top of your... Just there, just
some silver foil.
Some silver foil.
That's outrageous.
Oh, let's have a... Those two little bits of brightly coloured silver foil. What are they, Philippa?
Listen, I wasn't zippy enough last week, so I have my emergency zippy provision on top of the recording booth, which, yes, they may be chocolate biscuits from Marks and Spencer's, but they're not Easter eggs, so I haven't succumbed. Right. So thank you very much.
Really thick chocolate ones, folks. If you hear munching, that's what's going on. Sorry, you're going to ask me a question. Sorry, I butted in there.
Yes, so you're heading off. Well, you start your trip tomorrow.
Yeah, we have to go and get our certified test tomorrow and then head down to Heathrow to fly out on Tuesday. Yeah, so I won't be on next week, will I?
No, I'll talk about that a bit more later on. But yes, we've got Natasha joining next week. And then the next two... We are attempting to record together, aren't we? If your Wi-Fi holds up.
If my Wi-Fi holds up, yes.
You're not going to be in Bournemouth, though. Where are you going to be?
Oh, let's leave it as a surprise.
Okay, all right, fair enough. It's not Bournemouth.
It's a bit more exotic than Bournemouth.
Begins with B.
It does.
Anyway, that's definitely enough about us. Let's get on to the important bit, which is you, our caller-inners.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
And first of all, we have Erica, a first-time caller-innerer, who thinks Lower Loxley should aim higher.
Hello, Dumdy Dummers, Quentin and Philippa. I'm a long-time Archers listener, but newly listening to this podcast. A query about Freddy. Why is the hapless Freddy the one who will inherit Lower Loxley, while the more business-savvy Lily will not? Why in this day and age is it assumed that only the male heir inherits the family business, specifically when he has the intelligence of a gnat?
Well, she's certainly made an impression, hasn't she, on our first call? Short and sweet. Hasn't got much time for our Freddy. Welcome, Erica. I'm delighted. We're delighted that you found us at last. You're a long-time listener as well. And welcome to England's arcane hereditary. I was going to say laws, but I think it's just like bylaw, really. I don't know the actual answer. Philippa's going to come on now, Erica, and give you the impression she knew the answer. But once again, I'm spilling beans because I think this has been heavily pre-researched by you, Philippa. But you may know it off the top of your head.
In my defence, I knew the joyful gist. And then I just checked the details. Thank you very much, Mr. Rayner.
Yes, Professor Google came in handy just before we
came
on air.
I'm waggling my pencil at you now. So that's, yes. Anyway, yes. So Nigel left the estate, left Lower Loxley in trust to Freddie. But Elizabeth had the right to live in it through her lifetime. And Lily doesn't benefit from that, which is why there's all the talk about Freddie eventually having it. And she apparently had other assets. Nigel left her other assets. But I've got to be honest, I cannot recall what those were. It can't be Russ, surely.
You mean he left Lily other assets?
Yes, yeah.
But it is it's very arcane, isn't it?
It is. It was done to stop estates being split up and split up, which in some ways you can understand, but the fact that it just automatically goes to the male is, deeply unfair, especially as if we had to compare which child is doing the most. Because Lily's going off as well and studying land management. I mean, what?
She is. No, as a business decision, it's nuts. Absolutely nuts. I think Freddie's first business decision will be to employ Lily to run the place.
Yeah.
He's got any sense. So that's the answer, Erica. Yeah, it's all wrong. But it's all to do with estates and all that. Keeping stately homes in families, I guess.
I was a bit concerned when Elizabeth said to to Vince. Oh, he'll learn what he needs to from you. I know we'll have more chats about Vince, but I thought, well, that doesn't sound very good.
Yeah,
so. We've already mentioned about the bandstand nonsense. I mean, I was screaming.
I was just like,
bandstand, heaven's sakes, is it that hard? And when they were talking about how the Easter Bunny piece in social media had been viewed 400 times, oh my goodness, it's going to be millions. It's 400 times. Okay, that's a decent amount, but it's not quite as good as they were making out.
But equally dumb was Josh. He didn't get it either. I mean, he didn't give it much thought, but he just saw, well, I don't know, and then wanted to talk about hens.
But I'm very intrigued by this thing, this competition, this game he's going to run of guess the chicken. I mean, surely the thing with feathers flapping around with a beak is the chicken. It's not going to be that hard.
It's the chicken with the hat on, though, isn't it? The woolly hat. Spot the chicken.
Yeah, but...
Yes, desperate.
How is he going to... I just don't understand. He's going to have a toilet roll, a kettle, and a chicken with a hat on. You know, guess which is the chicken? It's not... It's... Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, there
and
we go.
Live streamed as well. Live streamed hen videos.
Does Wi-Fi work well in Ambridge? I don't... You know, they don't seem really up to date on current events or what's happening in the world, so I'm not sure. It's going to be a disaster, and I'm right, I'm there for it.
Who's going to stand there and watch a hen video? Hens rooting around.
The hens. They'll attract the hens there, I guess.
Do you think Erica will still be listening to this podcast after this drivel?
No.
I've just discovered Dumpty Dum. It's a load of nonsense.
Yeah. Anyway, from that
thank you,
fascinating
Erica.
Response. Yes, thank you, Erica. Your call was great. Yes, sorry. It's just our response was terrible. It was a great call. No, thank you. Do call again. And now we go to Rob, who called on Sunday with a different take on the three R's.
Good evening, Philippa, Quentin and Dumpty Dummers all around the world. What's to do about Rory? The plot, like Freddy Pargeter, gets thicker with every episode. Latest rumours include a sugar daddy mummy professor. Well, I've worked in higher education, and trust me, a professor needs a sideline to get that sort of money together. And I'm not talking about doing some private A-level tuition. I'm thinking more along the lines of what Professor Brian Cox does. But that is even if he is actually still at university. Alice has started seeing cracks in that facade, and for the bacchanalia he has planned to ensure that Brian and Jenny have to move into an even smaller house, he's invited his old schoolmates, but none of his uni chums. I think that the party will also be the big reveal for whatever Rory is up to. What he's doing to make his money, how he's getting it all together. The place will be littered with leaflets and application forms. The only question is, will they be for a dodgy crypto pyramid scheme, or will they be for rollicking Rory's rogering service? We shall see.
Yes, okay, rollicking Rory's rogering service. That'd be a great website.
Those are the three
R's,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I thought Julianne was a male name, actually, when they'd been talking about it earlier on in the week. It didn't. I guess it's...
there's been speculation about that on Twitter, yeah, that it could be and Facebook. Could be Julian.
Yeah, but whether it's Sugar Mummy or Sugar Daddy, I just...
It's a little bit unsavoury, isn't it? Do you think that's a bit premature, the L word, for those two? It's come a bit quick, hasn't it?
Oh, no, they've been... Because she supported him when he went into nursing, that September.
Yeah.
And they're already...
Everything's been so overshadowed by Alice and Chris, you forget all the other storylines, don't you? I have to say, it was a blessed relief we didn't have any of that this week. Alice and Chris free week. Oh. Mm. It's going to be interesting how and if Ben... conceals it from Beth because she doesn't like any secrets, doesn't she? So if she finds out about that, it really riles her, doesn't it?
Yes.
And she's going to. I think she has to be told because she's going to keep on going on about it, isn't she? So the fact she has, I think she's going to have to be told. Look, this is who Julianne is. So don't say any more.
And I think she can be trusted with it.
Yeah, I do. Because who did she have a heart to heart with? Lily, didn't she? Lily told her that she had a fling with Sol.
Yes.
So she's obviously one of these people feel trusting of to tell them, trusting of to tell her things. So, yeah, I think she needs to be told, otherwise she's going to niggle away at Rory, which would be no bad thing.
Why is it in these situations that people, particularly in Ambridge, they tell this big secret and then they say, but you can't tell anybody? Whereas normally, if you're telling somebody something that you want them to keep themselves, you would start off the conversation, look, I'm going to tell you this, but I need you to keep it. I don't understand why it's, I'm telling you everything. Oh, but you mustn't tell a soul. You haven't got the terms and conditions in the right order.
Yeah, I mean, some people you know well enough that you can trust them not to have to introduce that caveat, can't you?
Yeah, but it's like telling Ben. I think you can trust Ben, but equally, he does need to tell Beth, or else it's all going to kick off, and then that'll be another issue in their relationship. Yes. You know, the ups and downs. It's not all going to be plain sailing.
Yeah. Rory can automatically trust Ben, but he doesn't know Beth as well, does he? So, So if you're right, if Ben tells Beth, got these same initials, then he'll have to give that caveat. But I think she can be trusted to keep a secret, is what we've concluded, isn't it?
Anyway, that was a great call, Rob. Thank you so much. And now we go to Tracy from California, who's in a flap about our flapjacks.
All right, Tracy from California here. Okay, this is my prediction and my feedback for my coloring ring today. I think Vince is going to buy the hotel, Grey Gables, and have Josh manage it. I hope BL does decide to actually close Barrow and sell it off, and the workers buy it and turn it into a co-op and add an abattoir and make it like a crazy huge success. I know that's probably not going to happen, but I wish it would. I will also say I'm sick of Chris and Alice. And why didn't the moderator or the mediator have sense enough to say everything went pear-shaped when Chris started talking about the primary parent like this is 1976? And I don't understand why one of the little old ladies can't call them together and be like, have a flapjack and I'll tell you how to make a marriage last 90 years like it's 1926. You know, people used to be married forever back then. And if Rory is so swish, why didn't he rent an Airbnb for his party? He's going to go to his elderly parents' house with their Wedgwood plates on the walls and closets full of sweater vests. I think Jennifer's one tichine is going to get broken because somebody on Adderall or Whippets or whatever kids are doing these days is going to break it. Fun fact, in the U.S., a flapjack is a pancake. So all this time, I've been thinking everyone was walking around town eating pancakes with their hands. I was like, that is really inefficient and very strange. I don't ever remember seeing any British people walking around with pancakes, but I didn't get to all areas of the country. So maybe it's a Borsetshire thing. I think we would call your flapjack a granola bar, I think. Anyway, happy Dumpty D-ing, and I'll look forward to hearing this week's show. Ta-ta!
She's not pulling our leg, is she, Tracy from California? Well, first of all, Tracy, great to hear from you again. I thought she disappeared. So fantastic to hear you calling, Tracy. Taking the mick out of us Brits. Ta-ta. We are funny, aren't we, when we're parodied. Well, I mean it's just a gift for you, Philippa. It's all about food. So let's start on the really important thing here. She says a flapjack in the States is really a granola bar.
Okay.
Shall we excommunicate her now?
Well, in a way, it is similar to it, but you need to add approximately 3 litres of golden syrup to a granola bar to reach the consistency of a flapjack. If you put a flapjack in a paper bag and it's not covered in grease and syrup when you take it out, it's not a flapjack in my book. So, yeah, that would be mine. But speaking about food as well, can we just discuss cheese, grated cheese in a cheese and pickles? No, I'm sorry. This is crucial stuff. What person would prefer to get grated cheese? First of all, you've got to clean the grater, which is a right faff. And then when you eat it, it's spilling everywhere. You don't get as much. It's not who prefers grated cheese. Is there anybody? Only people, if you're on a budget, you do, because you grate it so that it lasts longer. And maybe that's a reflection of where they are. But no. Grated cheese in a cheese and pickle sandwich? No, I'm sorry. No, not here. Not now. Not today.
Finished? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. He's got that off your chest. I'm a mixed fan. I think it's if you've got grated cheese in a sandwich, it goes everywhere, doesn't it? Which is really annoying.
Yeah.
But I like grated cheese on pasta. I like grated.
Yes, but we're talking about in a sandwich here.
I'm just defending grated cheese.
Specifically, sandwich.
Grated cheese on top of soup. I'm all for that. In a sandwich, if it's in there. I'm more irritated by the fact it spills out. But if I make a sandwich,
yes,
with cheese, I would have, you know, I will have slices of cheese rather than grated.
Thank you.
Purely for convenience. I should point out really what is really irking Philippa is the fact that we put out a poll on Facebook for the prospective title for this podcast. And you might have guessed the grated cheese suggestion came straight from the mouth of Philippa.
And the other three were yours.
The other two were mine. She was pumped up by her overwhelming victory in the last poll, which you did thrash me. Glad to know that my flappy paddles stuffed your grated cheese this week. I think you picked up a paltry 10 votes for grated cheese. Flappy paddles came in with 57 on our last look, so it's going to be called flappy paddles. But I think that's what's really grating you, is the fact that you lost. And
I am disappointed in the people of Dum-de-Dum. I really am. Come on, grated cheese would be a much better title than flappy paddles. I even voted for it myself I saw the numbers were so bad.
So actually, it's nine votes.
All right, come on.
It's nine votes because one of them is yours. You just thought, I'll throw in a food reference and the Dum-de-Dummers will just follow me. But no, they're more discerning than that. You put a flappy in a title. Guaranteed winner. Anyway, so it's 1-1 on the title polls. And we sort of agreed on grated cheese. Happy?
Yes. Happy? So there we go. Yes, well, very happy.
She did mention a lot of other things apart from the flapjacks. She thinks Vincent's going to buy Grey Gables. Well, isn't that what Ardiddle is all about? Presumably he's going to buy the place. Oh. Who is this? Bloody Ardle, anyway. It drives me nuts. Can't stand it.
He makes me think he's a restaurateur who isn't, if he buys it, he's not buying it for a hotel. He's buying it for the restaurant. And, oh gosh, look, it's got 30 rooms in addition.
I mean, apart from the fact he's a patronising, smarmy tit, what really annoys me about Ardle is the fact that he's meant to be Oliver's special guest, right? Great big deal. And a week on, we still haven't had a single scene between Ardle and Oliver, which dramatically is just a nonsense, isn't it?
I think Ardle's quite a nice chap. I don't understand why Freddie's taken him.
Everybody has. He's so patronising. He's so patronising to Tracy, isn't he? I can't stand the way he talks to her.
I think he's just encouraging her. It was just the way he did say, thank you so much, you made me the drink the other day.
God, he makes my skin creep the way he talks to people. Oh, you carried my bags. Let me think. Oh, yes, you're Freddie, aren't you?
But he's being nice.
Oliver needs more traces around here. But he's just so patronising the way he says it. Oh, God, no. Seriously, have a chocolate biscuit. I think you've lost the plot. like Ardle?
I've got no problem with. Yeah, I think he's fine with his electric car and his AirPods and watch that needs charging. And yeah, I don't understand why Jazza and Freddie have both taken again.
Well, the fact that Jazza should speak volumes. He's a fine judge of character, Jazza. And could you get? I need some more sockets. Could you get me an extension lead? Yes. Where would you like me to plug in your devices? Says Tracy, all fawny.
But I did think when she was tidying up, I'm just tidying up, it's what I like to do. I was expecting her to say, hang on, what's this piece of paper? You know, either I'm going to take over Grey Gables or I am Oliver's long lost child or, you know, some revelation.
I thought you were called Ardle. I didn't know you were called Julian. That's my theory as well.
Oh.
Great, I can see your reaction. Going through various permutations of startlement.
Yeah.
She's pulling her face, folks. Looking at the ceiling.
I'm... doesn't strike me as the top, but I like it. It's a good idea. Anyway, Tracy, a great call. Thank you ever so much. And now we go to Catherine in Canterbury, a first-time caller in error on why certain old habits drive her round the bend.
Hi, I'm Catherine in Canterbury. So I wanted to comment on Jill and Leonard's speedy spins around the racetrack. It was such a happy, feel-good, life-affirming scene, and it really made me smile. I had an image of Jill in a crash helmet, gripping tight with white knuckles and asking to go round one more time and sharing her sort of excitement with Leonard. It was really delightful, and partly because it was obviously an unexpected activity for two pensioners to be involved in. And so that made me reflect on how we are really preconditioned not to associate elderly characters with positively taking on challenges just for the thrill of it. I wonder if some listeners felt the episode was a bit cringy because it was too obviously trying to be anti-ageist and virtual signalling, but I disagree. And I wanted to congratulate the scriptwriters for choosing to positively depict Jill, who is obviously a great grandmother, in such a non-stereotypical way. I run a housing charity for elderly people, so I'm really aware of how perceptions are slowly beginning to change, but it is a slow shift away from ageist attitudes and age discrimination, and it always needs challenging. In the same way as road signs that depicted old people crossing used images of stooping couples with walking sticks, I'm always in favour of storylines for pensioners being consciously age positive. And by the way, Jill and Ben's wonderful relationship, and I think that's been so cleverly developed as authentic and realistic when cross-generational love like that is so rarely highlighted. And don't you think Ben gets so much out of his relationship with his gran precisely because he doesn't treat her like an old biddy? Anyway, thanks for a great show. All the gossip makes my regular Archers listening even more enjoyable, and I'll definitely stay tuned. Thank you.
And thank you, Catherine. That was a great first call. Well done. Do call in again. Yeah, it's interesting how age is perceived in Ambridge. I do think it's dealt with differently in Ambridge than we see in other places, because as far as I'm aware, Christine is the only one at the moment who is in, well, she's sort of in an apartment by the care home. She's not actually in the home itself, is she? Everyone else just keeps going until they don't. We've had the dementia story, but that was some years ago.
Until they keel over in the bull.
Yeah. Yes. And
the longevity is phenomenal in Ambridge. I mean, in terms of the actors alone. I mean, the characters' ages pretty much reflect the actors' ages, don't they?
Yes, exactly. They do carry on, usually, until they're... Mm. They're not around anymore. And so it does give lots more opportunities for exploring their characters and the relationships. And I think Catherine's right. The relationship between Ben and Jill is lovely. I just didn't understand why Leonard was already filling forms in and attending a safety demonstration when he was just going along to watch. That's not an age thing. That's just a, what are you doing? You're not even allowed through that door. No. It's bravo, Catherine.
The scene, well, the whole episode lifted Catherine's spirits. And welcome to the podcast, Catherine. Excellent debut. And I have to say, Catherine's call lifted my spirits, actually, because I was a bit sort of, oh, it's going to be one of these episodes. Okay, right. In fact, I put my pen down. I thought, well, it's not much to write here. But listening to Catherine being so enthusiastic about it made me look at it in a different way, and I'm glad you have, Catherine. And what you say is true, actually. It was all a bit, some would say, as you said, virtue signalling, but it was life-affirming, and it was delightful. It was nicely done. It was nicely done. And it's particularly interesting when you are, and I like calls like this, when we have somebody coming at it with expertise, and you run a housing charity for the elderly, as you said, and you say, we need more of this. And you're quite right. I mean, why should age be a barrier? And Leonard clearly is an extremely good driver, and Jill likes to have an adrenaline rush, and why not? And you're quite right. I remember as a kid seeing those road signs with those stooping couples at the side of the road. I was thinking, God, is that what you end up with? Is that how you end up when you're old? They really depress me, that triangle sign. And these days, it should be a sign of elderly couple doing the Zumba or something, shouldn't they? But that is endemic. Yes, you have to sort of throw away those old stereotypes. And I'm a great believer that if you are young at heart, then you stay younger for longer, I'm sure. And why shouldn't they enjoy themselves? And Jill was giddy with excitement, wasn't it? It was rather sweet. And also, it wasn't Chris and Alice. I would have taken anything to have a break from that. So if it had to be a supercar day, so be it. But and that point you made, that Ben doesn't treat Jill as an old biddy. He enjoys her friendship and her wisdom and her nurturing is nice as well. And you're quite right. It isn't just a grandma and grandson dynamic. There's more to it. He gets a lot out of that relationship, and she does too. And she picked up very early on that he was nervous. So, yeah. Thank you, Catherine, because it made me look at that differently.
I like the scene when Ben was first in the car and pulling his seat forward, and the instructor said, "That's far enough." I felt like Ben's nose was sort of pressed against the windscreen.
You do see some drivers like that, and I'm not making a sexist comment here, but it tends to be women drivers, and they are absolutely like next to the wheel, aren't they? There's no get.
I'm not getting that. There are some drivers, whether they're male or female, that
I did qualify that, but it tends to be.
Yeah, but then you still said it.
I did, because it's true. I look at these drivers and I'm thinking, how could you be so close to the wheel? If the airbag goes off, you got no hope. But also, it's so uncomfortable. It's like if people feel if they're close to the wheel, they're safer, more in control.
Well,
right, I'll await the emails, but there you go. It's one of life's
observations. Yeah, there you go. If you want to complain about that sexist comment, you just head straight over.
It's not sexist, it is just an observation. If it was men on the whole, I'd say it was men. God, you can't say a damn thing these days, can you? That tiara's gone to your head.
Thank you, Catherine. Thank you, Catherine, for your call. Now, don't forget that next week, Q is off on his world tour. So I have Natasha Archer, Mally Harris joining me. I'm so excited to talk to her. Please do get your calls in now. You can ask questions for her. And of course, your usual calls about the week in Ambridge. Please start getting those in. And if you're wondering how to do it, here's how.
Yes, the easiest way for you to record a message or a plot prediction is to go to speakpipe.com/dumtydum. Don't forget the T in the middle, so it's dumtydum. And you'll also find a link in the show notes. Have a look at our pinned tweet as well on the dumtydum Twitter account. You'll find all the details of how to leave us a message there. We do need your calls in by 12 noon on a Saturday. Yes, it's Saturday for the moment, for the next few weeks. It will be lunchtime on Saturday for the deadline. So put that in your diaries, please. And please keep them to a maximum of 2 minutes. And bear in mind, you need to be at least 18 to take part.
And back to our calls. Pedalling our way next is Christine. And she's not convinced by Vince.
Hello, Philippa, Quentin and all fellow dum-de-dummers. This is not so much formally cycling Christine here, as I've just been out for a beautiful bike ride around Worcester in lovely sunny England. On to the Archers. I wanted to talk about Rory and Quentin's observations last week about Rory having changed his character. And I think that's entirely plausible. Prior to the Alice outburst, his view of the world would have been that Jenny and the rest of the family had taken him in, and despite the circumstances, they'd loved him. He'd grown up to feel that they loved him. And so fundamentally, he would have felt that at heart, people were generous and kind and loving. And with her outburst, in one fell swoop, Alice has destroyed all that, because he now doubts whether people are kind and generous at heart or whether they're just pretending to be. And I think this will colour him throughout the rest of his life. And I still think he's going to be the long-term baddie in the series. One other thing I'd like to say is I think him having a sugar mummy is just feels a very lazy storyline to me. And what on earth is all this with Vince offering to lend David money at cheap rates? It just seems ridiculous and doesn't ring true at all to the Vince that we were presented with in the early days. I just don't buy it. And if he's undergone that much of a personality change, I just don't believe it. Anyway, hope you're all having a lovely time. Bye.
And bye to you, Christine. I'm glad you are back on your bike, cycling around lovely Worcester. Sounds super. Right. OK. Lots in Christine's call. We haven't really spoken about sugar mummies, have we? And Vince. So I think we ought to start there, Philippa. We all thought many of us thought anyway that he was up to no good in terms of selling sexual favours, and he denies it's just companionship, but I don't think any of us believe it. I'm sure Julianne or Julian, whoever Julianne is, will be expecting more bung for their buck, so to speak. Careful, I put a B in there. And it's all rather... I'm surprised. I just think I've always thought Rory was smart, and I can't believe he's being so dumb and naive. I know he's what, 19, 20, he could be excused, but he's always shown a bit of brightness about him, and he just seems to be completely taken in by this idea that he can earn easy money this way and he won't get hurt. I fear that he...
Why? What's wrong with that? Why is he dumb to do that? Surely that's a clever move.
Yeah, but he's not harming anybody. I just think it's going to get nasty, is what I'm saying. I think it's a dangerous area to try and earn extra money. But you don't. Interesting. Go.
Yeah, I think, no, good for him. He's not doing anything dangerous. He's earning some money. He's providing companionship to someone. Why not? It's free world. I'm not judging. I don't judge, you see. Never.
You're an Archer's listener. Of course you judge. I'm just worried he's going to get hurt. I think the potential for exploitation is there. Don't you?
I think he's canny enough not to. I think I'm more worried about Alice finding this party and reporting it back to Mummy and Daddy and it all kicking off there. But
I think he's being naive. All right.
He's had enough to cope with. So, yes, I'm okay with that. Let's talk about Vince, though.
Sell your soul and sell your body. Yeah, you're okay with that.
No, I'm not saying sell his body. I'm just saying...
Well, he is.
He isn't! You don't know that.
You don't think he's going to be asked for that?
No, and it's up to him. He can say yes or no. He's a strong enough person to say no.
So, if he's asked and he says yes, that's you're selling your body, aren't you?
Well, that's up to him if that's what he wants to do.
Anyway, you want to get on to
Vince.
To Vince.
Yes.
What do you want to say about Vince?
I want to say about Vince that I think he is playing them like a pack of cards. He was deliberately saying all these things that would tweak Ruth and David's heartstrings. Mm. He played everything that he could. And then at the right moment, he's a salesman. And at the right moment, he said, oh, I just need to go to the toilet. No, he didn't. He was just giving them time. And then he was lingering. He was waiting for the right moment to step back in. So only when, was it Ruth said, do you think we can get him? Do you think the offer still stands? And he was back in the room. He played them. He is looking to... launder money.
That was my thought.
He's dodgy and I love it. I love it.
He needs to shift this 40 grand, doesn't he?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I thought money laundering as well. I did. Yeah. He says, I don't want you thinking I've got some secret plan. Oh, yeah.
We do.
We do.
We want it.
And then slightly confused me when he said, I didn't know you from Adam. Oh, God, don't bring him into it as well. he played this off. I know what I'm like and how I come across. A bit of a chancer, but, you know, you've got something really real here and I want to invest in something that means something, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah,
because he
pressed all the buttons.
If you remember that scene when he went out for a meal with Beth and Ben... He could clearly see how much Ben meant to Beth, and yet he still played this awful card about how he was having an allergic reaction and how an ambulance had to be called. He's not soft, I don't think.
No, but I think he genuinely likes Ben and thinks he's good for Beth, because he described the other guy as a plonker, didn't he? Yeah, yeah.
But yes, but he pushed it too far, so he's not loyal.
In his defence, can I bring in Bernadette Cagnoni off our Facebook group? She came up with an interesting theory. She says, am I so naive? I took it at face value. I'd like to think it's genuinely the offer of the loan. Front Row on Radio 4, straight after the Archers, had a feature highlighting belligerent generosity. It seemed a very poignant juxtaposition to which Audrey Brown replied, belligerent generosity. Never heard the phrase before, but I know exactly what it means because I know people who do this. Interesting. Belligerent generosity. In other words, you must accept my gift. You must have it. I want to help you.
And I've come across people like that, but that's normally when they've gone through some maybe tragedy when they were a child, something like that, that turns them into an extreme people pleaser. And Vince doesn't strike me as that. But
he wants to be liked, I think, by the Archers, by Elizabeth's family. Mm. Just one other reference to Rory and Julianne on Twitter. Les Archers at Leslie 2 said, oh dear, is Julianne the same age Siobhan would have been? What would Freud say?
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that, we need to say thank you, Christine, for your fabulous call. Lovely to hear that you're cycling again. And we need to head immediately to Witherspoon with a sugar-coated call on the mother of all issues.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Philippa, Quentin, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. Happy Easter and Passover weekend to everyone. By the time you're listening to this, the Easter Bunny will have been unmasked and will know their identity. I really have no strong feeling about who it is, but I'm hoping it's Joy. It would be a fun welcome back to the storyline for her. Though I don't understand why Freddy thinks the success of the egg-rolling event depends on the appearance of the mystery rabbit. It doesn't say much for his planning skills. Speaking of unmasking, to no Dumpty Dummer's surprise, we learn that Rory has been earning some free perks on the side. At least it seems that he has remained in university. Now, some people, I believe including our hosts, may have been surprised that Rory's older friend was a woman. I, for one, was not. First, I do think his relationship with her is non-sexual. Second, I think Rory's sexual appetite is more strongly oriented to men. There's a long history of gay men being the escort, with a small e, of rich older women. Most importantly, we all know Rory's developmental history of losing his mother at a very young age. Julianne, being 20 years older than Rory, is serving as a replacement maternal figure for Siobhan. I think I know what you're now asking. What about Jenny, darling? I know Rory is close with Jennifer, but I never got the feeling that she was a maternal figure to him, more of a close friend or aunt. So all this leaves lots of room for Rory to have a boyfriend as well. I know I suggested on Facebook that Adil Shah, a.k.a. Dial Hash, was Rory's drug-dealing boyfriend, but I was just joking. I do think some cool uni student has caught or will catch Rory's eye. Talk to you soon.
Yes, Witherspoon, absolutely agree with all of this. And so interesting to have your perspective on it. I don't know. I agree with you. I think Rory isn't doing anything untoward with Julianne. And as I said earlier, good for him. I'm not judging him for once in my life. I'm not going to judge. Who is the Easter Bunny? Actually, I'm now wondering, is it Ardil? Because he was brought in when everything was going so badly at Grey Gables. So is this an initiative to get everybody there on the last day? But can nobody type the name Ardil Shah into Google to find out what this person is? What, I don't understand why they're not doing that.
Well, it's that dodgy Wi-Fi again, isn't it, around Ambridge? Are we going to get the hen videos? I take Witherspoon's point that is a very common sight, isn't it? Older women being escorted by younger gay men. You know, it's been going on for years and years. We haven't established who Julianne is yet, male or female. So if it's a man, then I'd like to hear what Witherspoon would say about that as well. Interesting. Although he thinks there's scope for him to meet somebody cool at university, a boyfriend, so he'll be sort of sorted on both sides of that argument. But yes, I mean, what does Witherspoon know about psychology anyway, Philippa?
Quite a lot.
Yes, he does. So he's probably right. He's probably, damn it.
Yeah.
He mentioned he seems convinced that Rory is at university. I have my doubts. Not one university guest has been invited to this secret party. That was a bit odd.
I think he's at university. He mentioned about this, the professor who brings in the cream cakes. I just think...
Yeah, but when he was pressed by Alice... When he was pressed by Alice the other week, he was very shifty. And I think he's there nominally. I don't think he's there much of the time myself. I love that anagram, dial hash. that would have been great if that was the case. The point about if it is Julianne providing a maternal influence, which dovetails beautifully in with Les Archer's tweet, doesn't it? We have a Freudian couch for you here, folks. That's what we have.
Thank goodness for all that we've got Witherspoon with all the information there. That was just what we needed. Thank you, Witherspoon. And next, it's Night Owl Emily and what's been grating with her in Ambridge.
Hello, P&Q and all my fellow subjects in the Kingdom of Dumpty Dum. It's Emily from Canada calling. It's just nearly 1 a.m. in Vancouver, which makes it nearly 8 a.m. in the UK. I am sporting my usual middle-of-the-night gravelly voice for your entertainment. I've just been enjoying the view of the nearly full moon and thinking about how we all see that same moon, and it just makes our community feel like we're in a world that's a little bit smaller. Okay, last week, Freddie wins the most annoying character prize in my mind. Because he's whiny, he's petulant, and he's selfish, and a moron when it came to that Easter Bunny clue. Drove myself and many people bonkers how slow he was to get the answer. And I don't know, it was just super irritating. Then there's the question of Vince's loan and whether or not it's safe. What if he and Elizabeth break up? Will he go back to being cutthroat Vince? Rory and this sugar baby thing, something not right with that. I can't think of any reason why Ben would have to keep it so secret. And will that lead to him lying to Beth again? Then there's the great grated cheese Dumpty Dum debate. After Tracy said she likes grated cheese on her cheese and pickle sarnies, lots of people had something to say about grated cheese on sandwiches, and it was quite an entertaining debate. I suggested test kitchens so that we could decide on our favourite sarnies. Bye!
Bye, Emily. She's another one wearing a tiara, isn't she? Queen of Dumpty Dum. 1 a.m., Emily, come on, you must get some sleep. But thank you for your dedication for phoning in. We've had the grated cheese debate already, haven't we, Philippa, unless you've got anything more to add to this. I tickle me more about the call is I love it when you hear North Americans using very British words like bonkers and sarnies. makes them more amusing, I think. Freddie, the most irritating character of the week. Well, he often wins that prize, doesn't he? The thing about Freddie is that I thought he was growing up, and he's had a relapse, hasn't he, in the last few weeks. He's become a kid again. I thought those scenes with him and Linda after the explosion, and when he came out of prison, he'd matured, I thought, and had grown up a bit. But the way he sort of got all giddy about chasing an Easter bunny, it was pathetic. Pathetic.
Well, he's just desperate for it to work. He's desperate to prove to his mother that he's a success.
All right, we're back
so
to Freud.
Keen.
Okay, right. Yeah. But do you take my point? He has regressed.
Well, I think compared to how he was, he has matured, but we've still got a long way to go for any maturity to reach, you know, normal mature levels, because we're talking about Freddie here. Yes, there were the scenes after the fire, but that... I saw him mature. He was just being honourable and being Freddie. So,
well, the very fact he went in there to rescue Linda was,
yeah, but that's Freddie is good intentioned. He's not selfish. He tries to do things for people.
Sure, and then he wanted to direct, didn't he? And he was encouraged by Linda. And I just thought, oh yeah, coming on, Freddie. Yeah, you're less irritating. This week he's been really irritating.
Freddie was not for me. I hear what Emily's saying, I understand. But for me, Freddie wasn't the most annoying character this week. It was Roof and David. They were so irritating. Too big a risk, says Ruth. And then the minute Vince has said it's a good idea, she's saying to David, oh, have you seen those numbers? And have you seen how good they are? Originally, she told Josh not even to mention it to David, that, you know, no consultation, the mind's made up.
It really struck home this week how, because I haven't really clocked it as much as you have over the past, but the way they keep repressing Josh's enthusiasm and his ideas. I was really cross about it this week. Cause
thank you. Yeah.
Josh was talking a lot of sense, and you know, Vince as a businessman, he could see the sense, and he complimented him, saying he's got a real business head on his shoulders, that one. And I was just furious the way that she was just like dismissive. But as soon as you say, Vince comes and says, oh, I can't understand why you're saying no, suddenly it becomes a good idea when their son is presenting it to them.
And she said she'd run all the assumptions. Well, she hadn't. She hadn't run the power costs going up, which they absolutely are.
And her little ears pricked up when he said, Josh said, well, it would pay for itself in 8 years. 8 years? Yeah. And 40 grand.
She was more interested in the peeler.
Yes, put the peeler down. I like that line. Put the peeler down. But 40 grand in the scheme of things on a farm is not a lot.
No.
You can spend double that.
Especially
on a tractor.
If it's going to save them.
Yes.
Yeah. Madness.
I thought that the amount needed to be higher to make it more of a gamble for that reason. But I didn't
but
like
they've
the
never,
way.
They've never said any yes to any investment that Josh has proposed. No. If Pip said it, I'm sure they'd be jumping for joy, but anyway, thank you, Emily. That was a great call. Those are all the calls, but you can also send us an email if you'd prefer.
Yes, if you'd rather send an email, visit the dumptydum.com website and click the Contact Us tab at the top of the page. Please do keep them brief, up to a maximum of 250 words. Now, like the calls, please get your emails in by 12 noon on a Saturday for the next 3 weeks. Remember, you need to be 18 or over to submit any views or comments.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
And so we go from our caller innerers to our email innerers. And our first email is from Chris in York.
Hello, I wonder what has happened to the herbal Lays now that Adam has gone off to the Ninth Circle at Bridge Farm. They used to be all the fashion. Do they self-maintain, like unwashed hair, and after a year or so? Or have they disappeared under layers of Stella's excess hay and slurry? Perhaps Brian has concreted over them to make a helipad for Justin's visits. Chris from York, and then he tags on this PS. I too wish the solicitors in Borsetshire were more dynamic and said, God damn it, a lot like their American cousins on TV. Instead, I bet they lurk in their offices drinking tea and eating chocolate hobnobs, except in Lent when they have given up chocolate, and hiding from their clients whilst texting podcasts and thinking about their allotment, which needs some attention. Pure guesswork, of course. Chris from York. Is it guesswork, Chris? I'd never guess, would you? Yeah,
that's
great.
Brilliant.
He's picking up on your suits desire, aren't you? We've got Roshi, you know, we want suits.
Yes, exactly. I love that. That made me chuckle a lot. Yes, we haven't heard about the herbal Lays at all, have we? I presume that they were not sustainable and that Stella has, yes,
well,
removed them.
It means no Lays, no Adam, so there's always a benefit, isn't there? So, although he's been very cheerful, hasn't he? He's been, ever since he's done honest work at Bridge Farm, he's been a changed man.
Well, who knows? We haven't heard from him for a while. It might not last long. But Chris from York, that was great. That made me laugh a lot. And now,
yes,
prepare yourself, Quentin. Our second email is from Anon of Ambridge.
I'd never have guessed. Never.
Dear Uncle Quentin and Auntie Philippa, I was having a lovely quiet time relaxing by the bandstand and suddenly there were millions of people shouting and a 6-foot rabbit bouncing around. Sometimes I just want peace, but if the bandstand isn't the right place, where is? Thank you, Anon of Ambridge. Well, Anon, I'm sorry that you're needing a bit of peace and quiet because last time you were needing some companionship, so I dread to think what's happened that you now need to be on your own. It sounds like Lower Loxley is quite quiet at the moment, or it's bound to be, because Freddie's plan isn't going to work. It's going to be a disaster. Nobody's going to turn up. So that might be the quietest place to go to at Easter, and you might have a chance of guessing the chicken.
You resold that, didn't you? Guess the chicken. yes. Dear Anon of Ambridge. First of all, I'm a bit fed up, actually, Philippa. I went to great lengths last week, didn't I, to give Anon of Ambridge what I thought was an incredibly witty response to his cricket query about catching practice with an egg. Not even a sort of, well, thanks for that in-depth, witty riposte, Quentin. But anyway, I'll let that one go. Where should you go for somewhere quiet in Ambridge? Well, I think you could also go to Grey Gables, because clearly that's struggling. Ian is moaning about only having 3 covers, so that seems pretty quiet. Although you might get disturbed by Ardle, who's poking his nose in everywhere. Go for a walk on the rewilding site. Be nice and quiet, wouldn't it? Rewilding. So that's my other suggestion. My third suggestion is, if you can find the cell where they've locked in all the silent characters, that's probably your best bet. Those are my options.
I think it's going to be quite a loud, busy week in Ambridge, and I do have to warn you, because we've got the unveiling of the Easter Bunny. We've got Liz's secret party where she's going to get given a book token. And we've got Rory's secret party where, well, I don't know what secret gift he's going to be given. But anyway, so yes, be careful where you go.
Do you think Anon's going to get an invite to Rory's secret party?
I've got to be honest, Anon, as much as I care about you, no, I don't think so.
I think that's going to be next week's email, isn't it? Dear Auntie Philippa and Uncle Quentin, why was I left on my own? Why did I not get...
Yes, but next week it's Natasha. Anon, if you feel
oh,
like
great.
You need a week off, Yeah, if no, you feel like no, you need no, a week, off, next Natasha. Week is the week because Quentin's not going to be there. Natasha is not. Malia is not going to know what is going on if you start asking questions, and she may log off immediately. So, Anon, you sound a bit tired and weary. Just have a rest, I beg you.
She's going to say, "What the hell is this podcast?"
Well, she's going to say that anyway, especially if she listens this week to see what.
Oh, that's true.
Oh dear. Anyway, thank you for your calls and emails. We love them. Do keep calling in. Now, on to Dumdy Book Dump. You are aware I host the Quick Book Reviews podcast. Well, I was interviewing Stuart Lawrence, should I say the Honourable Stuart Lawrence, about his inspirational book. Stuart is, of course, a brother of Stephen Lawrence, who was murdered 29 years ago in a racially motivated attack. And the anniversary of that is the 22nd of April. So it seemed only fitting to have Stuart on Dumdy Dum today. So Stuart Lawrence, whose amazing book is called Silence is Not an Option, welcome to Dumdy Dum.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Well, let's talk about The Archers first, and then we will talk about your book and all the significance behind it, because we've got a lot to talk about in a short amount of time. You have some experience of hearing The Archers, even if it hasn't been you that's chosen to press play.
Yes, definitely. It's one of my mum's go-to things to do, and especially when I'm around her house. She has her little DAB radio on as loud as she can while she walks around the house listening to it. So, yeah, she's a massive fan.
And so do you know not to call her when The Archers is on? Is that a thing?
I don't know. Maybe that's why she doesn't answer the phone sometimes to me. Maybe I've now found out the reason why. Well, as I said, it's on as loud as she can possibly have it when I'm around the house. So I think she's trying to indoctrinate us all into listening, including the grandkids as well. So
let's talk about your book, because there's a real reason for this book coming out and coming out now. Because, you tell the story.
Well, the book was written during lockdown, and one of the things that I've realised since post-lockdown is about the mental health of our young children and how these last 2 years of them being locked away or told to be doing certain things that they don't usually do has really affected them. And as my background as a school teacher, I quickly realised that this was going to be a long-term recovery process as well for the young people. And I really hope that the book can be part of that recovery process to allow young people to understand that we all have fears and issues in our own lives, and we all sometimes have that negative voice inside our head that tells us we can't do things. And that's what I'm trying to hit at with the kids, to try and centralise that voice, trying to work out why it's saying those negative things, and then try to turn those negative things into a positive and try and make sure they have the best version of their lives as possible.
And personally, I think it's not just a book for kids, it's for adults as well. I find it really useful because it's not overly simple, but it's simple enough for you to just to really get to the meat of it.
Yeah. What I say to people is we are all a child trapped in an adult's body, aren't we, really? And we all have that point in our lives where we say that was a significant point, and that then sort of scar us, but marks us in our life to say, from that point onwards, that's the point that you're going to remember. So mine's 16, obviously, because of when Stephen died. But so I'm a 16-year-old trapped in this adult's body, and I hope that the book will talk to that young person inside you. And I say to people all the time, it either gives them a hug and says, you know, congratulations, you're doing great stuff, continue. But sometimes that little person needs a little kick up the bum sometimes and says, come on, keep going, like, and re-energised and re-motivated. And hopefully the book can do that as well.
And of course, we're coming up to Stephen Lawrence Day, the 22nd of April.
And this year, again, because some schools will be on holiday this year, that's the only problem with Stephen Lawrence Day during the Easter month, because Easter always moves. It's a bit difficult at times, but we're really glad that, you know, lots of schools will be taking part either before the Easter holidays or after the Easter holidays. And it's just a great way for schools to celebrate all the good work that they're doing and that they do to champion young people, to ensure that young people have the best outcomes in life as well.
Wonderful. And what more could we hope for that? So Stuart Lawrence, whose book Silence is Not an Option, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Well, how splendid to hear from Stuart and about his book as well. It's hard to believe, isn't it? It's 29 years already.
I know.
And it's still raw, isn't it? It still is such a current issue. There's so many other things to sort out as a result of that terrible case.
But
I also like the fact
that hopefully the day can give some positivity, you know, looking forward, not just looking back. Yes, celebrating Stephen's life, but also helping children today, now.
And I love the fact that, once again, it's all down to the mum, isn't it? That's how people get to listen to the Archers. Without the mums, there'd be no Archers.
And there are other people listening to the Archers because we need to go to Facebook, because we have to say a how do to you, to Wendy and Susie.
Mike and Claire.
Anne and Andy.
John, Paul and Marcus.
So what has our Facebook group been talking about this week? Let's find out as we sit back for the roundup with our Sandra.
Hello, this is Sandra with a selection from the Facebook group for the week beginning Sunday the 10th of April. Apologies if I sound a bit odd sometimes, but I have a throaty hangover from the virus. After 2 virus-free years, I managed to travel over 5,000 miles to catch it. Oh dear, Rory, group members are having a laugh at your expense. It all started on Sunday with a missed call from Julianne. There was some debate about the call, and Katrina Murray, among others, thought it was to do with drug dealing. Drew Hamilton was on the right track when he thought that Julianne was a sugar mama or a pimp, and others had the same idea. Kate Lyle thinks that Rory's sugar mummy is a man. Leslie Southgate and others didn't think it actually mattered. However, others remembered that he had been open about his sexuality, so he wouldn't need to cover it up. On to a day at the races. I thought Tuesday's episode was quite sweet, but of course not everyone did. Mia Fox described it as B-O-R-I-N-G, all capitalised. I enjoyed it, and Darcy Jorgensen thought it was charming. Jonah Titchmarsh described it as an episode where you really get to know characters, and Lynn Rafferty thought the same. Glyn Fullerlove thought it might be building up to Jules' exit from the show. I hope not. Lillian McCarthy saw it as a relief from the Aldridge Carter Donovan drama. However, Laura Jackson was listening and wondering when the car was going to crash, and who would be either terribly injured or killed. I thought the episode was quite warm and fuzzy, which brings me on to Vince and Brookfield. Lucy Mellon thought that he might be a really nice person with a lot of money who wants to do some good with it. Jill Bowles pointed out that investing is what some people do. It's better than having money just sitting in the bank. However, many disagreed, including Darcy Jorgensen, who suggested money laundering. And, of course, some thought that it linked to Beth. That's Ben's girlfriend, Beth, not Bess, his dog. Joan Dines Reynolds could see Beth signing up for agricultural college and staying within the farming community. That's an interesting idea. Anyway, that's my 3 minutes up for now. Bye until next time.
Thank you, Sandra. Do hope you're feeling better soon. My goodness, our social media team each seem to be suffering from COVID when it's their turn to do the roundup.
Well, they've battled through, haven't they?
Yes.
The race day left her warm and fuzzy. And I do need to mention this very clever tweet to do with the race day, which Stephen Bowden at Wenlock House put out. Means you haven't won a medal this week, Steve. At least you get a mention. He said, if Philip had invested in Grey Gables alongside Oliver, they could have called their partnership Stirling Moss.
It is. Yes. Well done.
It took about 10 seconds to register with you there, Philippa. And if I can continue with the Stirling Moss theme, is that I did tweet about this, is I, as a schoolboy, got to be driven round Goodwood Racetrack by Stirling Moss.
There we go.
It's an amazing experience. It was a brand new Rover. Back in the 70s, people might remember the new Rover. and got to be in the car with him. I was in the back, and he started driving around Goodwood. And after about 10 seconds, I was left in the footwell on the passenger side of this Rover. So I was crouched, looking between the seats, watching Stirling Moss driving. We had no seatbelts, nothing. How did we survive in those days? So I just watched this incredible man driving this car. And he just laid back. He was effectively driving it, steering it with one finger and just flicking the gears and just chucking this car around.
How did you get selected for that? Were you kidnapped or was it by choice?
The man who had organised this race day, we happened to be school friends with his son. So it's who you know, isn't it? But so we're three of us in the car with Stirling Moss. But I got a fantastic view of his technique, albeit stuck in the footwell, in the back. Honestly, I was just hurled straight into it.
Well, you survived, thank goodness.
These days, we'd be strapped in with special suits and special belts and crash helmets.
And a helmet.
No. 1970s, what do you expect?
No. Well, thank you, Sandra, and to everyone on the Dumdy Dum Facebook group.
Yeah. Of course, you'll also find us on Twitter at Dumpty Dum. Please try and include the Archers hashtag, it's all one word, using a capital T and A. It's so the visually impaired can also enjoy any Archers-based tweets. Also, don't forget that hashtag, the Archers, is your gateway to the hugely enjoyable tweet along. It's also worth including at Dumpty Dum in your tweet. That way, more people get to hear about this podcast.
As well as at Dumdy Dum, we're both on Twitter. I can be found at QuickBook Review, that with a 3 instead of a W.
And I'm at 13 Minute Man, that's 1 3 Minute Man.
Hello, it's Fry here. No, not that one. And now, on Dumdy Dum, it's time for Tweet of the Week.
Now, Philippa, if I had 4 medals to give out, I would give a 4th to this one from Ian Kernow at Kernow27. Larry McLamington, I think, would be best, Beth. That's what's the name he suggested. So if I had a tin medal, you'd get that. But I only have 3 to give out. And in bronze position, it comes in from Nick at Check Your Sheds. Stop making Josh be right. It's upsetting. For the first time, I was upset for Josh. I know. I feel your pain there, Nick. I feel your pain. In silver, it's a smutty one, Philippa, so cover your ears. It comes from Miss Filth. She's putting out some filthy tweets. She's calling herself Dame Rosie Porty at the moment. Porty Rosie, good friend of this podcast. And too much Nigel in him. Never a problem for you, Elizabeth.
Rosie Porty! Honestly.
I tell you, it's filth. Gets you a silver, though. She knows which buttons for mine to press. But in gold, and it came in today during this morning's tweet along. It come from one of my favourite tweeters. It's Sam at _ Sam Dean with an E, and she says, for gold, the cravat doesn't fall too far from the Aldridge tree, does it? Lovely. So Sam, that wins you a gold. Congratulations to all our medalists.
And don't forget, we're on Instagram at DumDeeDum. Do follow us there.
Thanks, as ever, to all our contributors and to our social media supremos, Shambridge for our voices, and to our podcasting parents, Lucy V. Freeman and Royfield Brown.
So what will happen next week? Will the Easter Bunny have to hire security for their big reveal? Will Jill propose building an extension to Brookfield to include a full racing track, pit lane and hospitality suite? Will Rory's party pass without any complication, ending with hot chocolates and party bags? And will universities alter their marketing strategy to not only confirm that students have access to a gym and Deliveroo, but also to a large dating pool of the single, wealthy and retired? All will be revealed next week. But for now, it's a thank you for listening and a bye-bye from me.
And if you don't mind, I'm off to drain my bladder. I'm bursting. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.